This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Brian Fernandez, Tan Chung Han, myself, Sharad Kutin, the top business stories of the day. Balanced budget 2020, is it likely or is it unlikely? According to the second finance minister, Dato' Sri Johari Abdul Ghani, that goalpost has been moved back by 2 to 3 years.
I think we need to extend a bit the figures. I don't think by 2020 we'll be able to achieve the balanced budget, because if you do that, then basically you will squeeze the economy development. So I think what we need to do, we need to space it out. We will try to extend it by 2022 or 2023 to make sure that, you know, it's a gradually we go and approach into the balanced budget.
That was Second Finance Minister Dato' Sri Johari Abdul Ghani.
Yeah, so back when the government planned for a balanced budget in 2020, oil prices were very different. They were at $90 to $100 US dollars per barrel. Then oil prices hit as low as $30 US dollars, which obviously disrupted the timeline. So perhaps in 2023, that's when Malaysia can finally see a balanced budget. So he says that, well, we need a little bit more time and perhaps another 2 to 3 more years.
Okay, Han, what about that government fiscal consolidation agenda? Is this news going to get observers worried?
Well, maybe. Look, going by the comments made by the second finance minister that we just heard, you know, once again, he says we need to spend in order not to disrupt but to stimulate the economy. So looks like there perhaps is less consolidation than expected, you know, with those comments perhaps hinting at some expansionary elements. We have to spend.
Okay. Well, what about the fiscal targets, deficit targets for the years in between the now and that goalpost that's moved back somewhat?
Yes, so the government still hopes to achieve this year's fiscal deficit target of 2.8% of GDP. Now, we've come a long way, mind you, since 2010, when the fiscal deficit was 6.7%. But the finish line, obviously, now has been pushed back. Now, how are we going to get there? Well, Han, I think the answer is in tax compliance, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So that's why we've seen, you know, companies getting whacked with tax bills, you know, for much of last year. December last year, we had Aeon Credit. November, SP Citya. October, CocoLand. September, EcoFirst. May, MK Land. May also, Magnum. And then you go back to April, TNB. $2 billion in an additional tax bill.
Okay, so what's happened with all these big companies is that they've had their tax bill revised up.
Right.
Isn't that the thing?
So, yeah.
Because they weren't, was it a lack of inadequate reporting? What was going on with those companies that, you know, allowed them to, in that situation with the additional tax bill?
Well, I mean, safe to say, it's various factors. But going back to what the second finance minister said, you know, he basically mentioned this, you know, whereby a big part of this fiscal or reducing the fiscal deficit, you know, will be the revenue side, right? So, you know, he talks about how, you know, it's more about tax compliance. You know, it is not being overzealous in taxing people, but more of ensuring compliance. In other words, in making sure that the corporate sector is on a level playing field, as opposed to the tax-abiding corporates who do pay their taxes, perhaps being being handicapped versus those in the shadow economy which does not pay taxes.
Yeah, but you see, so that's a very good point, because more revenue will go a long way towards helping to trim the fiscal deficit. Mm. Now, Moody's had warned of this recently. They said that in the absence of further meaningful revenue-raising measures, additional fiscal consolidation will be limited. So according to government estimates, for example, revenues would decline as a proportion of GDP. So let's look at the numbers in a little bit more detail. 2012, it was 21.4%, which is the recent peak. 2017, it had dropped to as little as 16.8%, and this year it's forecast to drop to as little as 16.6%.
Yeah, so once again, that's revenue as a share of GDP declining there. Now, on top of that, Moody's also says that Malaysia's debt affordability, that is weaker compared to our peers, those rated in the A median as well. So, you know, we 12.5% of revenues in 2016, 12.5% were just spent servicing interest payments, okay? So much higher than the 5.6% average among our peers.
Yeah, so essentially doubled, huh, Han?
Yeah, more than double, yeah.
Okay, now, Dato' Sri Johari also said yesterday that he believes the government still has enough fiscal room to service those debts.
So you imagine if I stay put on the 16%, but we can continue to grow our economy to 2 trillion. So you take 16% of 2 trillion as compared to 16% of 1.2 trillion, where basically the government will have about 340 billion. Here we have got about 240 billion. So I think we have enough space to go and pay all this debt.
Yeah, so the MARC also said that the government must convince global investors that it is pursuing the right policy path. Otherwise, that could lead to rapid capital outflows. So according to the Malaysian Rating Corporation, basically relatively strong GDP growth, and the forecast is for 2018 is 5.3%, will result in respectable growth in tax revenue. So they also added that sustainable expansion in private consumption will ensure that GST revenue will be between 40 and 50 billion this year as well.
Right. Going back to the issue about servicing our debt, right? So again, that 12.5% of revenue going towards interest payments, that's for direct liabilities. Many sovereign credit rating agencies also point to the risk of contingent liabilities then crystallizing onto the government's balance sheet. Now, if that happens, if those risks are still on the table, does the government have enough buffers to make sure that they can contain any potential systemic risk from those contingent liabilities?
Right. So an example of contingent liabilities would be 1MDB before it got on the books, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just so that we're all on the same page. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's move on to some corporate news. Shareholders of SCOMI Energy Services have rejected the move to merge with its parent company, SCOMI Group, at a meeting yesterday. And this despite the merger proposal getting a resounding yes from shareholders of SCOMI Group during EGM on the very same day.
Okay, so let's go back to August. And if you recall, the parent company, SCOMI Group, proposed merging with its two listed subsidiaries, SCOMI Energy and SCOMI Engineering. So no surprise that SCOMI Group shareholders voted yes, they need this merger, because essentially SCOMI Group has been a loss-making entity for the last six consecutive quarters. So with their latest second quarter financial year 2017 numbers, SCOMI Group in fact reported a net loss of 26 million against flat revenue of 174 million.
Okay, Han, do the reports help us understand why SCOMI Energy shareholders rejected the merger?
Yes, because essentially, if they said yes, SCOMI Energy would be privatized. Okay, so there's a reminder here who was cited by Starbase, who said, and I quote: "Shareholders probably prefer to have SCOMI Energy stay as a listed entity, given the recent highs of crude oil prices of about $67 per barrel, compared to the lows of 2015, where it was about $34 per barrel. However, if we compare those comments by that remiser versus what the CFO of SCOMI said, and I quote, "Unfortunately, our business is not directly related to an increase in oil prices." Again, this is the CFO, Mukhniza Mahmud, of SCOMI Group.
Yeah, so to give you a perspective of who voted for and against, 29 shareholders who hold 67% of the shares voted against the proposed merger, while 35 shareholders holding 33% of the shares voted for it. So they have notable institutional investors in SCOMI Energy. Lembaga Tabung Haji is one of them. They own 4.6%, Caprice Capital 2.3%, and Norges Bank, which owns 2.2%.
Also, in the lead up to this meeting, you had an independent advisor, BDO Capital Consultants. They had advised the minority shareholders of SCOMI Energy to accept the proposed merger. Why? Because in their opinion, BDO's opinion, the offer was fair and reasonable, the offer was at a premium, and that SCOMI Energy shares were less wicked, less liquid. But then here we are now. We now know that SCOMI Energy shareholders voted no to this merger.
Okay, so now with the thumbs down from SCOMI Energy shareholders, what's next for the group?
Well, basically, SCOMI Group country president for Malaysia, Zubaidi Harun, told The Edge that SCOMI Group will still proceed with the merger with the engineering unit if the shareholders of SCOMI Engineering give their green light at the EGM later today, which is Friday. So if the merger of SCOMI Group and SCOMI Engineering goes through, shareholders of SCOMI Engineering will be offered the opportunity to swap their holdings of for new SCOMI Group shares. Now, that's going to be in a proportion of SCOMI Engineering shareholders would get 10 new SCOMI shares for every 7 SCOMI Engineering shares held.
But here's the thing, though. You know, it's, you know, if this merger goes through, it's kind of a bit of a letdown because with a three-way merger, obviously, it'd be bigger. I mean, just to compare SCOMI Energy size versus, say, SCOMI Engineering. Market cap, SCOMI Energy, about 4 times bigger than SCOMI Engineering. Revenue also about 5 times more than SCOMI Engineering. So you've got the larger entity that has said no. So if there's a merger with SCOMI Group and SCOMI Engineering, you know, it'll be a smaller merger.
Yeah, and also there are key issues with SCOMI Engineering. That is a capital-intensive business and has a funding gap at the moment. It has various transportation projects which also have a long gestation period to yield results.
Right. So question here is, you know, going into the weekend, will SCOMI still feel lonely, you know, alone, or will they have, you know, this merger? So SCOMI, the meaning of feeling lonely.
Okay, now let's move to other news.
There's a boy man reference there. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry for you, really. Sorry for
what?
You that you're listening
we,
to that.
Okay,
SCOMI,
okay.
The meaning. Okay,
can we move on to IPOs? Apparently, there's been a decline. We've seen a decline in the number of listed companies here in Malaysia. We had 960 back in 2009. We're down to 880 at present. Are there enough IPOs in the pipeline to arrest the decline? Well, here's CIMB CEO, Group CEO, Tengku Dato' Sri Zafrul Aziz, with his outlook on local listings for 2018.
If you look at a lot of the deals that we've been hearing in the market and some of which we are working on, we feel that the IPO market will be more interesting this year. There's a view that it could be a few big jumbo IPOs that are coming in to the market. But we're anticipating in the first half of this year in the IPO market, in the equity capital markets, to raise around 10 billion ringgit in the first half of the year.
That was CIMB Group CEO Tengku Zafrul Aziz.
Yeah, so where are these IPOs really coming from? For a couple of sectors, essentially. One is infrastructure, then financial services, as well as the consumer sector.
Yeah, so looking at potential IPOs that have been reported in the media, for example, you got QSR Brands. Those are the guys that handle KFC. That listing could fetch 2 billion ringgit.
Finger licking good.
Finger licking good. All right. MMC Corp's port business up to 4 billion. Bank Islam Brunei Darussalam, perhaps 2 billion. E.co, this one being reported, perhaps up to 2 billion ringgit. Edra Power, we've been waiting for this listing for a while now, even before Edra Energy was spun off from 1MDB. Still waiting for that. You know, could it happen this year? We'll find out.
Okay, perhaps not so jumbo, but a listing nevertheless. Binasat is a telecommunications supporting service provider, and they're set to raise about 40 million ringgit from their IPO this coming Monday, January the 8th. It's the first listing of 2018 and was oversubscribed by some 34 times. Make sure to tune in to the Breakfast Grill on Monday when we speak to Zurahman Hamad, CEO of Binasat.
So, we're talking about jumbo IPOs, but how much money are we talking about? Well, essentially, they're looking to raise something in the region of 10 billion ringgit this year, or 2.5 billion US dollars. That's a big jump from last year's number of 1.7 billion US dollars. And the 2017 figure was 5 times more than 2016. So despite that reduced number of IPOs, the size has actually gone up.
Yeah, so zooming out and looking at the broader deal-making, the corporate deal-making scene, this is M&As and also IPOs. You got a forecast recently from Baker & McKenzie and also Malaysian member firm Wong & Partners. So essentially seeing a rise in both volume and value for IPOs and M&As for this year and next year. However, that could all moderate by 2020.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the news and then we'll be back with the opening numbers on the stock market and a look at many things. Of course, also today we have the property show. That's something to look forward to. That comes up after the 9:30 news. So stay tuned for all that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.